Back with you midweek Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021 on Connecticut Today. 3:30 saw us speak to Ted Taylor, the CEO of Sportech. Sportech, an electronic gaming company, they run the OTB branches in the state, and they want to see if they can get a foothold into any further legalized sports gambling in Connecticut. 5 p.m., another visit from Quinnipiac University constitutional law professor Bill Dunlop, who talked about the legal footing the city of Bridgeport might have if it wants to fine-tune an ordinance or pass a new one, putting limits on protests outside individual homes. Get deeper into whether or not Connecticut's going to have legal sports gambling and who will get a piece of the pie, as it were. You may see or hear the company name Sportech, S-P-O-R-T-E-C-H, Sportech PLC, being involved here in these talks with the Indian tribes, MGM and others. Well, Sportech says they should be involved in gaming in the state because they have ideas that can make it work. Joining us right now is a gentleman who has been carrying that message for a while. He's president of Sportech Venues. Ted Taylor joins us on WICC. Ted, Paul here. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Paul. Thanks very much. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ted, and I'm following this from afar. You know, I was just commenting earlier that I've been doing talk shows like this in the state for 30-odd years, and I remember, Ted, right after this compact with the Indian tribes was signed in the Weicker years in the early 90s, there was this. It was almost immediate, Ted, back three decades ago. Well, what will they have control of in the future? And if this thing expands to things like sports and other games, will there be a constant debate about this? Ted, you're in the middle of it now, and I think we are here. We arrived at that some time ago.
Yeah, definitely in the middle of it right now. And it was interesting listening to you and at least one of your callers earlier talking about how things have evolved in Connecticut over all those years. And, you know, one of the debates at the moment is that issue of exclusivity. And, you know, the gist of it, we believe that sports betting, very specifically, it's the state's right to determine what happens. It's quite simple. We're not interested in arguing about anything. We have no argument about lottery or iGaming or casino, any of that. But the legislators and the people who wrote the law 30 years ago were careful and clever in making sure that sports betting wasn't part of the deal that was given exclusively to anybody.
So, Ted, that is then the essence of what's going on here. I would assume that there are people who agree with you and your attorneys and your counsel that say, hey, as you said, God bless the Indian tribes. Let them have what they contracted to have. You don't believe this covers sports betting. Am I correct?
That's absolutely clear, yes. Yeah.
So what is how would you explain that then, Ted, to the common person listening now who knows this has been going on for years? They've been following it on the radio, on TV, and in papers and on the internet. How would you explain to them what the sticking points are in this whole thing, kind of expanding on why this is so difficult to lay out here?
Yeah, we tried to boil it down to a simple set of, almost bullet points, really. And here's how we see it. There are four operators, and they are the two tribes, the lottery, and Sportech. And they each do slightly different things. There is some crossover, but they do different things. And they have exclusivity, which was historically provided in 72 for the lottery, 76 for the paramutuals, so what Sportech does now, mm-hmm. and the 90s for the casinos. And they have, pure, clear, crystal clear exclusivity in those areas. And I heard, the chairman of Foxwoods saying at the hearing that, look, you know, everybody should stay in their lane. And we agree with that. but sports betting was not included, and it's something there for the state to determine how that evolves. The different parties are asking for different things. The lottery would like to do iLottery and sports betting. The casinos want to do iGaming and sports betting. Sportech wants to participate in sports betting alongside what we do currently, which is taking bets on sports happening elsewhere, mm-hmm. in our venues, online and on the telephone. So we're not asking for anything that is not, you know, out, unusual. It just so happens that, as you mentioned earlier, you know, there's always a lawyer on one side saying something different, frankly, because that's how they get paid.
Ted, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Got to do a little business here. The president of Sport Tech Venues, Ted Taylor, is the guest. Sports Tech, as Ted just said, they want a piece of the sports gambling, the legalized and proper sports betting, which is likely coming to Connecticut maybe sooner than later. Ted, hang on. First, traffic and weather together on the sixes here on WICC. And Ted Taylor is the guest for a few more minutes here on an edition of Connecticut Today, where we're talking about the possibility, maybe the likelihood, sooner or later, that we finally solve this legal sports betting question that's been hanging over the state here for a good several years. Chad, you mentioned the two tribes, the lottery with a claim here. Maybe they say what they can do, the two tribes, and your company, Sport Tech. Ted, in case people do not know, you did allude to it a few seconds ago. What does your company do, Ted, and why? What is it that they do really well that you think should make your outfit at least a major player in the legal sports gambling?
Yeah, so what we do is, I mean, historically, and many people still know it as off-track betting.
Yeah.
So that's been around since 76, and it evolved quite a lot. Lots of the locations have changed. And broadly now, what that is the My Winners, the winners' locations throughout the state, and there's 11 of those. We have a couple of large Bobby B's sports bar restaurants, which are associated, and they're, you know, they're in the same buildings.
Mm-hmm.
We have we have an online platform called My Winners, and we have a telephone betting operation, and all that's historical. And you know what we've been doing is, I've been here 10 or 11 years now, and since we bought this business, I'm the only Englishman in over here in Connecticut who works for the business. And you know, we consistently invested throughout the state in improving the business wherever we can, based on the metrics of the business. Fairly obviously, you can't just throw money away. But you know, what we've done is we've been consistent in saying we're going to do this, and then we've gone out and done it, and we've done it as well as we possibly can. And what we do is take bets in retail environments and online environments, and you know, it's quite easy to see that that's just a continuation, exactly the same as the lottery is an expert lottery provider. It's fantastic for the state, churns over a truckload of money for the state. So it's very feasible to see them being allowed to do a great online lottery as well. And exactly the same arguments with two fantastic tribal casinos, you know, mm-hmm. Two of the biggest casinos in the Western Hemisphere. I know they used to be, they probably still are. You know, they should be able to do iGaming too.
What do you see, Ted? And I'm sure you have internal numbers, and I understand there's stuff that's proprietary. You may not want to talk about it, but when Sport Tech sees the Connecticut market for legal recreational sports gambling, what does your company see?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So now that we're a couple of years behind, say, New Jersey, and, just to be fair, Jersey's done this really well. And it's an experienced gaming state. You know, they've been around doing casinos in Atlantic City for a long time. They rolled out 2 years ago. And what we're doing is we literally look at the New Jersey figures, which are there available for anybody to read on the government website. And we believe that within a couple of years, so let's call it the second full year of betting on sports, that you know, the state will be approaching $20 million in tax revenues. By the way, that's more than will be derived in profit by the actual operators, quite a lot more, actually. The big win is iGaming by a considerable margin. It's probably 3-1. It may be more. So if one was looking at this and saying, you know, what is most valuable, it's the opportunity to do iGaming. And I think everybody knows that. Sports betting is smaller, but it's really important for us. You know, we're a much smaller company, and, you know, it's about, for us, it's about our business, our investment, and our people. You know, our people are just as important as anybody else's.
Do you feel, Ted, in any way that you and maybe even the lottery, but to a greater extent, you and Sportech may be at a little bit of a disadvantage only because, as you and I well know, the tribes also have that 25% from the slot machines, which they've been given to the state every year. You know, there's this constant threat of, hey, you can go with somebody else, but you may have to kiss those slot revenues, even though they're dwindling. We all can read the numbers. You may have to kiss those slot revenues goodbye. Is that, do you envision the casinos using that, or are they using that as an advantage?
Yeah, that, it does get used, and I can understand why. We don't actually agree with that argument. You know, they pay that as part of the compacts that they agreed, and if the tribes pay $200 million, then it means they've got $600 million based on 75%. That's a good deal for both parties. So if they elect to break the compacts, then I'm sure that, you know, they've got to consider whether or not they're risking the $600 million. You know, that's kind of a, you know, that's not where anybody wants to go. Nobody wants to be in a legal argument. And, you know, it's why we've been very, very, you know, consistent in saying that we agree that it's a state's right. And we agree with, you know, the previous Attorney General Jepson, who was quite clear on the matter in saying that the one area where there was no exclusivity is sports betting.
Ted, the area that, of course, our radio station serves primarily is the Bridgeport area, and you obviously know that Bridgeport has been, you know, back to the days when a guy named Donald Trump was not thinking of politics. This goes back years, decades, to when Bridgeport was seen as kind of this fertile ground for something along the water there, a small, medium, or large-size facility, maybe a hotel, maybe a gaming facility, and it still is kind of teased to people around here. Is there any interest by your company in a large physical presence in Bridgeport, sports gambling, or any other city in the state?
Yeah, well, we have an existing location down there, what you know is Shoreline Star.
Sure, yeah.
And yeah, the thing that's been spoken about most in the last couple of years since, you know, COVID's part of it, but also one has to understand that about 80% of the money that's bet on sports is bet online. Last year it was more because retail places weren't open and people were sitting at home. But yeah, we believe that there is an opportunity for some sort of entertainment zone, which might include, you know, the paramutual, the sports betting, you know, a retail F&B food and beverage environment there. There's definitely the space. And we would love to do something.
Ted, let me ask you finally, what do you think is really going to happen here? And I'm not going to ask you who do you think is going to come out the winner here, you folks or the lottery or MGM or the tribes, but do you get the sense now, Ted, that there finally may be some sort of a determination made here because of the implications, because of the market growing all over Connecticut? Do you think something will finally happen here sooner or later?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're pretty close to the one-yard line. You know, we're definitely in goal. And, you know, I'd like to go back to what the governor has consistently said is that, you know, he'd like a comprehensive gaming bill. And, you know, that includes the various operators, one of whom is us. And I think that the state needs it. This is all happening. People are gambling on sports. People are doing iGaming with illegal operators or just out of state. One way or another, they're doing it. So for me, given that the relative value of the iGaming versus sports betting, it seems crazy for the sports betting to be the roadblock. You know, as I say, we have to fight to protect our jobs, investment, employees. That includes me. But, you know, there's a lot more people who need to be looked after here.
Ted Taylor, thank you, folks. If you want to check out the company, it's sporttechplc.com, sportechplc.com, the president of Sports Tech Venues. Ted Taylor has been the guest. Ted, thank you. Feel free to come back on whenever you'd like. If there's any news or if you want to just talk about the environment as to what is happening in it, feel free. Ted, thank you and have a good weekend.
Thanks, Paul. Great to speak to you.
Appreciate it. Ted Taylor there, president of Sport Tech Venue. This goes back to some protests that were held outside the home of City Council President Idy Nieves. You may remember back in late September pushing for police reforms. Some of those protests, people say, got a little too boisterous. And now there is a move, perhaps, to limit protests in the city of Bridgeport outside private homes. How does it shake down with what the Constitution allows? Joining us right now, as he always does, to talk about things like this, Quinnipiac University Law Professor Bill Dunlop once again. Bill, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you doing, Paul?
Good, Bill, and good to hear from you. Boy, this must fascinate you. I sent you the article. It's kind of interesting here. The question here is Bill, I guess, what power would a municipality have in setting down rules, guidelines, or whatever to quell protests outside of public homes?
I think the city has more power than most people realize. This is one of those classic constitutional clashes where there are really important values on both sides. The privacy in the home on one side, free speech on the other. And the Supreme Court has drawn a very fine line. It's certainly not a straight line, but one that says it is okay for the city to prohibit protests targeting a particular home as long as the city does it in a very careful way. And there are laws like this all across the country. There are about maybe half a dozen states that have laws like this and a fair number of cities as well, but I have no idea how many.
Now, when they say, Bill, careful way, is it delineating specifics like silent protests or no public address systems or no screaming or yelling? Do you have any idea what some of these specifics might be?
Yeah, the basic rule is that restrictions on free speech, on public protests, have to be what the court refers to as narrowly tailored, meaning no broader than is necessary to achieve whatever interest they're trying to achieve. And the interest they're trying to achieve has to be an important or substantial one. And in this case, that is protecting people's privacy and the quiet in their own home. And when it talks about narrowly tailored, it means not banning all protests in the area. There have to be reasonable restrictions that can be regulating the time, the place, the manner mm-hmm. of protests. Any regulation has to be content neutral, meaning it cannot favor a particular viewpoint or a particular speaker. And it has to leave the people free to protest in the same general neighborhood, even if they cannot do it directly in front of somebody's house.
Interesting. And so, Bill, would it also likely say, okay, you can do this, but no bullhorns, no amplified PA. You can protest silently. The signs are fine, but you can't cross, say, a line of harassment. Has that been taken up by the courts, Bill? Is it a fine line between, you know, your public accommodation and your constitutional right of free speech and what then may be one step over the line into harassing an individual or their family?
Yeah, loud noise in a neighborhood, harassment of a family, those can be regulated anyway. That does not fall within the general concept of free speech. But just even a silent protest can be prohibited if it's focusing on a particular family, a particular house, and particularly when it interferes with people living in the house other than the person who's being individually targeted. Typically, laws like this are directed at protests that have been held in front of houses yeah. belonging to abortion providers or to police officers who've been charged with brutality or with unlawful killings. And it interferes not only with their interests, but also with the rights of their family members or other people who live in the house. And the city can take that into consideration as well.
So I'm getting the impression, Bill, by what you're telling us today, that if the city proceeds carefully and does this in a well-thought-out manner, they might be on sound legal grounds to do this?
Oh, yeah, I think there absolutely are sound legal grounds. Very few of these cases have reached the United States Supreme Court, three or four at most that I'm familiar with. And those, for the most part, have been fairly closely divided. So a city has to be very, very careful about this. But as long as it leaves room for some sort of protest in the general area, and as long as it's not doing this in order to protect a particular individual or to prevent a particular message from being disseminated there, it should be able to do this.
And the Connecticut chapter of the ACLU is obviously warning about unnecessary overreach, Bill, but I don't think that is to be surprising from them, because that's what they watch out for.
Sure, and they're right in line with the constitutional law, that the law has to be narrowly tailored, in other words, not overreaching, and it has to be neutral.
Bill, final question. Let me just go to the impeachment that's coming up, I guess, starting Monday. I'm sure as we read on the air here yesterday, you read, I guess, kind of the 2 points that the president's attorneys are going to make in this impeachment trial. Who knows how long it's going to last? You or I or nobody knows. What do you think we're going to see in a kind of a roundabout way next week? And could this last several days, a couple of weeks? What are your thoughts about this?
Well, in terms of length, your guess is as good as mine. Okay. This could drag on a long time if the president's defense lawyers want it to do that. It could also be that the prosecutors, the House prosecutors there, would like it to go on for a long time so that they can put in as much evidence as possible about what they're accusing the president of doing. So I think there could be pressure on both sides for this to keep going. Sorry, what was the other question?
Well, as far as A, was the length of time, and then B, the actual arguments they're making. You know, the president had freedom of speech. You know, he didn't directly tell them to, you know, storm the Capitol. I don't think that's a surprise to either you or I, Bill, by what they're probably going to argue here.
No, I'm sure that's what it will be, although there appears to be some doubt about whether they actually will get into the details of that. Mm-hmm. The president's legal team has changed completely over the last week or so, apparently because they are having serious concerns over what are the appropriate issues to raise. Some people would just like to raise the constitutional question, saying he has to be acquitted because this is an unconstitutional impeachment because he's not the president anymore. And others would like to really get involved in the merits of this. And I don't think even the lawyers yet know which way this is going to go.
Bill Dunlap, as always, thank you so much, Bill. We appreciate the time trying to explain these complicated things to dopey hosts like me. Bill, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Bill Dunlap, Quinnipiac University, constitutional law professor. Bill, be good, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Great. I look forward to it.
Thanks, Bill. Bill Dunlap, Quinnipiac University there. Okay, so he says the city would be, the city of Bridgeport, would be within its rights, done carefully, to maybe protect against what happened outside of the council president's home, outside of Idy Nieves' home back on the 27th of November last year.